region, Mr. Mario Burgos. He's the president and CEO of Burgos Group. Welcome to ABQ Connect Now, Mario.
Thanks, Jeffrey.
Absolutely. So let's get right into it. Let's talk a little bit about your background and some of the projects that you're engaged in that may inspire others that are listening to follow suit.
Sure. You know, my background's kind of an interesting animal in and of itself in that I have pretty non-traditional background. I mean, I've been everything from an actor to managing director of a advertising marketing communications firm to a political consultant to a failed candidate for office, not necessarily in that order, to defense contractor. Now I also own one of the largest electrical construction firms in the state.
Wow. You know, one of the things that we find interesting about entrepreneurs is the diverse background that generally they come from. So because you've had a taste of all kinds of success and some failure, would you agree that perhaps that gives you a sense of more appetite for risk to be an entrepreneur? Maybe you can talk a little bit about some of that.
Sure. No, I definitely have an appetite for risk. In fact, you know, not too long ago, I was talking to my wife, Roxanne, about what my next plans were and what I might go after. And she said, "Oh, gosh, that doesn't mean we have to start over again, does it?" And so I said, "No, we don't have to start all over again." You know, the bottom line is I've also joked that part of the reason I'm an entrepreneur and I've done all these different things is nobody would ever look at my resume and say, "Hey, let's hire him for that next spot," which is the next thing I've ended up deciding to pursue. And so, you know, that's part of it. If you're not going to fit the mold, if you're not going to fit into exactly what somebody thinks is the right place to the right background and the right fit and the right shape, you just kind of make your own.
Yeah, that's a good point, because in traditional jobs, a person generally does one set of skills in one particular area. And of course, I'm speaking generically, but an entrepreneur, you have to sweep the floors, you have to be the banker, you have to be the CEO, you've got to be the marketing director, you've got to do the operations, you got to fix the toilet. I mean, so the point is, and I'm being a little facetious, but you've got to wear all these different hats, right? So that prepares you to be who you are.
You definitely do, although if I had to fix the toilet, it'd be a really lousy workplace.
There you go.
And so you talked about starting over, your wife getting concerned about starting over, and I'm sure, you know, since you've had such a diverse background, that would be a worry. But it looks to me you started in 2010, and you've grown substantially. Talk to us about how you are able to have such a rapid growth rate in a short period of time.
Sure. Yeah. And it's something I read someplace one time, so I don't get all the credit for it, but I think it's actually two different things I read that I've combined together. But essentially, you have three different types of entrepreneurs. You have lifestyle entrepreneurs, which we see a ton of in New Mexico, people that do a certain thing because of a certain lifestyle it'll afford them. You have innovative entrepreneurs. We see those type of people come out of labs. They come up with innovations. They go out on their own so that they can kind of focus on that innovative idea that they have, that they want to pursue, that maybe they're not going to be allowed to pursue in the workplace for a variety of reasons. And then you have where I fit in, which is market entrepreneurs. And market entrepreneurs just see an opportunity and they seize on it. And very often it's contrary, at least in my case, it's contrary to what everybody else thinks is the market opportunity. And so, you know, Burgos Group was started in 2006. We started in about 2009 going after federal contract work. And at the time, obviously, we were in the middle of a recession. My feeling was the only place that anybody was spending any money at that point was in the federal marketplace. And so we went after some work there. And we were very successful in picking up work. Now we've expanded in construction. And the irony is in 2006, the company was started in 2009. It was myself in New Mexico and my brother in New Jersey. And so we were the only two employees in the company. You jump ahead 5.5 years later, and we have about 90 employees operating in 6 states. And we're in industries that everybody says are dying, whether it's the federal contracting defense arena or it's construction. Obviously, in the state of New Mexico, they're saying it's dying. But the truth is, we've, like you said, we're one of the fastest growing companies in the state, 2 years running.
Thank you for tuning into ABQ Connect Now. We're a business radio program sponsored by Exhibit. Yeah, DJ Heckes is actually meeting with another one of our clients here in business. Our co-host is Kristen, and our guest is Mario Burgos, and he is an entrepreneur extraordinaire. I mean, his business does facility support, project management, construction, environmental. Thank you again for tuning in. My name is Jeffrey Candler. Back to you, Mario, then. When you say that you're in these spaces that a lot of folks think are dying or are stagnant, talk a little bit about some of that work without divulging too much that you can't disclose. But like in the federal space, federal government space, talk a little bit about some of the work you do in that arena.
Sure. People ask me, hey, what do you do? And I say, we're a defense contractor. They say, oh, that means you work with Sandia. Well, actually, Sandia is Department of Energy. We're a defense contractor. We primarily work with the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and we work with other agencies as well. But ultimately, what it came down to is, even though we're headquartered here, and the majority of our personnel are in the state of New Mexico now, our employee base, but the truth is we chase work all over the world. We've chased opportunities that unfortunately the government canceled, but we chased an opportunity in Saudi Arabia and Qatar not too long ago. So we'll look at opportunities and say, hey, we can do that. We can either build the team internally to perform it, or we can build a team externally with other companies to go after an opportunity. And we do it. We chase opportunities all over the world.
So Mario, can you give us a couple of specific examples? Like, so let's say, for example, you have a fleet of 25,000 Jeeps in Wichita, Kansas. Those Jeeps need to be maintained at some point. They need oil changes and all that. I mean, do you do that kind of thing? So when you say you do defense contract work for the feds, what does that mean more specifically?
Sure. So I've done everything and am. For example, we have a contract with the Navy in Jacksonville, Florida, where we do aviation warehousing and logistics support. So we support, we run a 50,000 square foot warehouse with about 14,000 different items in it that all tie into aviation transportation. We ship the stuff all over the world, and that would be one example. We are, just bring it closer to home in New Mexico, we have for the last 4 years been the ground safety subject matter experts for the Air Force wide. So a lot of people don't know, but at Kirtland, there's the Air Force Safety Center, which actually supports the entire Air Force. And everything that has to do with ground safety, which essentially means that it's not in the air and it doesn't have to do with weapon safety, kind of falls into the realm of ground safety. It's our guys that do that interpretation. So that's another contract we have. We have another contract doing inventory supply management in Arizona. At Davis-Monthan. We have another contract where we provide, actually on the construction side of our house, where we're doing work at West Point in New York.
So interesting.
It's very diverse.
So once again, when you talk about that type of work and you say you were, quote-unquote, chasing work, do you engage in RFP processes, or the request for proposal processes? So let's say Wichita, Kansas needs some logistical security support in that arena. Do they put out an RFP, a request for proposal, you respond to? How do you actually secure federal government contracts?
Yes, they do. And yes, we do pursue them federalbusinessopportunity.gov, FBO.gov is where everything that's over 25,000, sometimes things that are less than 25,000, is going to be listed and put out to bid. So we'll go out there and we'll look. I mean, every day I look at, I probably spend about an hour and a half of every morning looking through these different opportunities. I look at them based on their set-aside code. I look at them based on the NAICS code, the classification, what type of work is it? Is it construction? Is it environmental? Is it facilities operation support? Is it electrical, et cetera? And then we kind of skim through those, and we get an alert every morning, which is free. It doesn't cost you anything to do it. You just have to set up the time. And you go through them, and you start looking through, and you say, okay, let me jump. My team actually laughs at me because I don't usually look at how am I going to do it. I look at why is the person on the other side going to think that I can or can't do it. So if you have hundreds of pages in a solicitation, which is a big complaint when you see government solicitations, I jump straight to Section L and Section M, Section L is the instructions. So if they're looking for a 5,000-page response, I'm probably not going to want to do it. That's a pretty big undertaking. And then section M is how is it going to be evaluated? So if there's anything that's going to preclude me from bidding on it in the evaluation process, then I'm going to turn around and go, okay, this is a no-go. But if it's not too cumbersome of a response, and there's nothing that's going to preclude me from bidding successfully, then chances are we're going to bid it.
Interesting. So do you have a group that actually oversees the RFP proposal fulfillment stage? Because I was at one time in a committee that did that, and that can be a laborious task. So how do you deal with fulfilling the RFP if you have a sense that it could be a viable opportunity for your business?
Fulfilling the RFP, or you mean actually responding to
that? Responding is a better word. Fulfillment is when you're actually implementing the terms of the contract later on. Sorry. So let me qualify that. Sorry, listeners. When you're responding initially to the request for proposal, how do you talk about that process?
Sure. So generally speaking, I'm the one who will identify those opportunities. And the reason is because nobody, again, would look at the things that we've done before and go, oh, here's a good opportunity that makes sense, because I'm evaluating against somewhat different criteria. With that said, yes, we do have a team that helps put together the proposals. Originally, it was just me. You know, when it was just myself and my brother, I would write the technical. He would help with the pricing. We'd kind of bounce ideas off one another, and that was it. And we just put them out there. The nice thing about federal contract work, federal proposal work, is if you put out a good proposal and it doesn't win you the bid, number one, if it's a good proposal and maybe you didn't win on price, then you turn around and you get your feedback and you learn. Unlike in the commercial marketplace, when I put out an electrical bid, for example, I'm very unlikely to find out how many bidders were there, how much did they, was it awarded for? Is there a debrief? There's very rarely a debrief that says, oh, you made this mistake, you just didn't get the work. On the federal side, they give you all that. So each time you start tweaking it. 5 years later, we've done probably 250, 300 proposals. So you're not recreating the wheel every time. No matter whether you're staffing environmental or construction or base maintenance contract, the bottom line is your approach to staffing and retaining employees is the same. Your management approach with regard to quality assurance and quality control may have some unique aspects to it depending upon the scope of work, but overall, that's repeated over and over again. So that's where you end up with this template base that you're able to use, and you start spitting these things out faster and faster.
That's a good point. So in the federal space, you actually get some feedback, and it's more transparent, and it actually can be a guideline for further attempts to bid on similar projects. Our guest is Mario Burgos. He is the president and CEO of the Burgos Group. They are an SBA, looks like they're 8A designation-oriented business enterprise as well, operating out of Albuquerque, and he's got a presence in a multi-state area. Kristen, do you want to talk about our upcoming huge B2B expo events?
I do. I want to make sure that everybody gets an opportunity to go. Our website is exhib-it.com, and that's where you can RSVP to attend our 9th annual B2B expo. This year, we'll be holding it at Sandia Resort and Casino on April 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. If you go onto the website right now, Jeffrey, you can register for a discounted ticket price of $25, and that's through April 22nd. Tickets will be $30 at the door, so we really encourage everybody to go in, RSVP, and get the info for the event. We also have a few exhibitor booth spaces left at this time, and those sell out every year. We run a waiting list. So we want to encourage you to go in and give us a call if you've got any questions.
Thank you, Kristen. And again, Kristen is one of the main cogs over at Exhibit, and she actually ends up, in a sense, being responsible for all the logistics over there. Does a great job. My name is Jeffrey Candelari. If you'd like to get a hold of me or any of my guests, give me a call at 604-9081. I work at Bank of the West, and I also promote live events called ABQ Connect Now. Our next live ABQ Connect Now event will take place March 31st at the Canyon Club, which is the Four Hills Country Club. It's a free business event from 5 to 8 p.m. So, Mario, getting back to you in the Burgos Group, some of the designations like set-aside programs, 8A designations, the SBA, all these different certifications. Talk a little bit about that world and how one, if one has a business, should consider being certified in some of these designations. And what kind of a competitive advantage does, let's say, an 8A designation give a business?
Sure. I don't know that it gives a competitive advantage. What it does is it allows you to go after certain opportunities that are going to be set aside that if you don't have that certification, whether it's 8A or service-disabled veteran-owned or woman-owned, that you're not going to be able to go after that opportunity because it'll be literally restricted. Interestingly enough, though, you know, there's two things. Number one is whereas 2 years ago, a large majority of our work came out of the government 8A side, now that's less than half of our business. We've taken that, which is the design of the 8A program. We've taken that first step, got into the government contracting world, know how to do that, know how to compete, whether it's for 8A competitive set-asides or 8A sole source or just small business contracts like the one we have in Arizona. And we've leveraged that knowledge and have now started, now that the commercial side is getting better, the market has picked up, taking that market entrepreneur side of me and pursued opportunities there. So our largest revenue base now is coming from electrical construction in the commercial world, not on the government side. Doesn't mean our government side's shrinking. It just means we've diversified. So, and part of the reason we do that is, you know, one thing that most people don't know, nobody tells you, the 8A is a 9-year business development program. The statistics, not officially, and you won't find anywhere, but if you ever ask anybody from the SBA kind of off on the side, statistics are about, of that 9-year program, half the companies that get 8A certified never land a federal contract. So they go through their entire 9 years with this certification, they never land anything. Of the half that do land a contract, it takes about half of those, so you know, another 25%, it takes them about 4 years before they land their first contract. So you only have about 25% of the companies, your question about competitive advantage, that land a contract in 4 years of having a certification. Now, in the small business world, how many small businesses, which you have to be in the 8A world with a few exceptions, but how many small businesses can wait 4 years until they land their first contract? Probably none. We were in that first 25%, so we actually landed our first contract in the first 6 months in the program, and we've gone on in the first 4 years to land 55 prime contracts. Our largest contract is $160 million task order-based contract with the Defense Threat Reduction Agency.
So, Mario, we've talked about your success, and especially during a period of recession, you had significant growth. And these certifications giving you kind of an edge, but you have an innovative diversity. Your business is a little bit more fluid. What do you think is the attribute to your growth and your success with those tied in? Is it your diversity? Is it your ability to kind of be fluid in what you guys do and really go after those challenges actively?
So it's a great question. And the bottom line is when you start a business in a recession, you have to be – it is a very, very lean startup. You have no capital. You have to be very aggressive in how you're going after stuff. And you really have to be very creative. The result of that is 4 years later, 5 years later, we still have that lean startup mentality. We still keep our overhead is very, very, very tight. We still keep very fluid. I'm constantly asked, oh, you've got 90 employees. Are you going to build a building? No, I'm not building a building. Mm-hmm. I'm going to stay fluid. I'm going to stay flexible and available to go chase the market where the market goes.
Our guest is Mario Burgos, president and CEO of the Burgos Group, a very diverse company that does a lot of federal contract work, as well as facility support, environmental construction, remediation, logistics. So, Mario, getting back to this economic climate in New Mexico, because that's why we're on this program, particularly Albuquerque, what do you see? You started 2009, I think you said. What do you see then? What do you see now? What do you see perhaps in 3 years as far as business in Albuquerque? Again, I know that's a pretty ubiquitous and generic question, but nonetheless, your perspective, where was it? Where is it? Where do you think it's going?
So, in, you go back to 2009, it was pretty scary in Albuquerque. It wasn't as scary here in 2009 as it was in the rest of the country. Things, especially in the home building, land development arena, had stopped. Everything else was sort of on hold. But again, in 2009, federal spending was up. And 2010 with the American Recovery Act. And as a result, New Mexico was okay until all that went away and budgets started to get tightened. And we've kind of felt that here in the state. If you're in the state and you're looking at only doing business with government entities on the federal side in the state of New Mexico, you may have really have been feeling a pinch the last couple of years. We're not only in New Mexico, which is part of the reason that we've been able to grow. As far as where New Mexico is going, whether it's Albuquerque or New Mexico, I mean, I'm actually very optimistic. I've been here about 15 years, and I see a buzz going on right now with regard to, and it's not just in New Mexico, but with regard to entrepreneurship, with regard to creating opportunities, and I think that we've got an opportunity to grow significantly. The one problem, I think, is that, you know, when I arrived here 15 years ago, I was a little younger. I'd like to say I had more hair, but I didn't. And when I arrived here 15 years ago, the truth is there were a group of people that were kind of talking about where the future of New Mexico is and where it's going and what do we need to do. 15 years later, very often there's that same group is still having the conversation. That would make me very pessimistic about our outlook. On the flip side, there's another group, and there's a younger group, and they don't really want to leave. They kind of like what New Mexico has to offer. They like the outdoors. There's certain things that we can't replicate or can't be replicated by competing states. And I think if that group stays put and takes advantage of really the knowledge expertise that's out there in the next generation, and if we can actually connect kind of the old guard with the new guard, it'll be a better place.
There's definitely some dinosaur leadership in Albuquerque.
Was you. I didn't say that.
Well, I'm saying it. And I'm not naming anyone particularly, but it exists. And I'm not going to apologize for that. And I think it's been in some ways a disservice because some of these folks that run platforms of power don't know how to run a tablet or don't understand what social media could mean to an economic uplift of some kind. But anyway, that's a whole different topic. Getting back to your statement about the federal government in Albuquerque and how it's changed, was some of that a function of the sequester, Obama's sequester, or is some of that a function of, our federal decision not to invest as much in the overall military presence as, let's say, the Reagan administration? I'm not being political, but there are political implications. So was it sequester? Is it just the changing federal, I guess you'd say, allocation of funds to defense? Or is it something else that's changed in New Mexico from 15 years ago in the federal space?
So I think the federal space is the slowest to change. I mean, it's a huge ship, and you don't turn a huge ship on a dime. It takes a long time for it to turn. But when you look at what's going on in the commercial space, when you look at the impact of technology in the last 10 or 15 years into how we do business, you know, I mentioned we have an electrical construction firm now. The technology that you utilize, even on the construction level, compared to 15 years ago, is radically different. And radically different means you don't need certain jobs. You may need other jobs. You may need other training. The federal government doesn't usually get rid of those jobs very quickly. So what ended up happening is you have these technology changes and the jobs haven't changed. And now you're kind of seeing that's finally coming to fruition. It's taken a long time, but those jobs are changing and those jobs are going to go away. There are certain things that you need a person to do that you don't need a person to do anymore. In the commercial sector, we've gotten rid of that position because you don't need that. In the federal sector and a lot of government sectors, I don't know that you have, but they are now moving because of budget crunches, and specifically in 2008-2009, they've had to move in that direction.
It's paradoxical that the federal government, and there are certain aspects of it that are on the vanguard of technology, on the other side of that coin, you've got this bureaucratic, monolithic sort of ideology that really is like molasses in the wintertime. It doesn't really unfurl into modern ways of surveying land by using a tablet, and you don't necessarily need an old-fashioned tape measure. It's sort of a paradox there, and that's what I think you're describing. So we only have a couple of minutes, Mario. Any last minute thoughts on anything in your world that you might want to disclose to our listeners, particularly those that are thinking about starting a business or maybe investigating the contracting world?
You know, I think that anybody that's ever going to look at starting a business, there's never a good time to start a business. It's kind of like there's never a good time to have a kid. You just have one. And it's the same deal on business. I mean, you got to take that leap. And it's actually the fear that keeps you going, that keeps you motivated. And as long as you have that fear, you keep pushing the limits and you keep testing yourself. That's not right for everybody. So you have to decide, is that right for me or is it not right for me? I think ultimately, you know, there's a lot of things in New Mexico we could be doing differently. We keep trying to emulate what other cities and states and counties are doing, and we shouldn't. We should look at what other people don't do and jump into that space. So if there's only four states that don't have corporate income tax, we should be one of the states that doesn't have corporate income tax. If we want to be business friendly, I mean, tell me what the purpose is of a business license. If you're going to write a $35 check, what do they do after that? So why not just be the only state in the nation that requires no business license anywhere? What a great way to say, hey, listen, we're open for business.
Wow. That reminds me of that old adage, the shoe salesman in the middle of nowhere, Kenya, I think it was. The guy says, man, there's nobody wearing shoes here. I'm not going to sell shoes here. And the other guy says, nobody's wearing shoes here. There's nothing but opportunity to sell shoes here. Anyway, good point. Kristen, talk about our B2B Expo.
Right. The B2B Expo 9th Annual coming up April 26th at Sandia Resort and Casino. We'd love for you to go in and RSVP so you can get the discounted tickets. The website is exhib-it.com. Give us a call if you have any questions.
Yes, once again, Mario, we really appreciate your being a guest. Looks like we do have another minute here. So getting back to any final thoughts about entrepreneurship, what inspired you? Just very briefly, because you're clearly an entrepreneur. What, you know, just leave our audience with what inspired you to just take all these risks and all the reward that comes with those risks?
So I'm a third-generation entrepreneur. I've been working since I was 12 years old. I grew up in a family that has yet to pass on a business to the next generation. But we learned how to succeed, which is basically, contrary to what everybody thinks, it's get up. It goes back to Ben Franklin. I mean, you get up really, really early, and you work really, really late, and you work twice as hard as everybody else. I mean, it's that old adage, you know, an entrepreneur is somebody who will work 80 hours a week so they don't have to work 40 hours a week for somebody else.
Well, you've been a very interesting guest. Perhaps we can have you back on because it's just particularly fascinating, the space you occupy in the federal realm and the fact that you do so many interesting things. We didn't even touch on some of the facility support, the environmental piece. We didn't talk about that. Remediation, that's a whole fascinating topic as well. Don't forget about our B2B Expo coming up, our next ABQ Connect Now live event, March the 31st at the Canyon Club. Again, thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We'll be with you after these brief messages. Thank you.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. Or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing, and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
Good morning, Albuquerque, and welcome to another installment of ABQ Connect Now. We are a business radio program. We are on 1050 KTBL, and we're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. I'd like to thank DJ Heckes for being the sponsor of ABQ Connect Now. Good morning, DJ.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
The purpose of our show is to have business guests, people of consequence, that really affect our economy and our movers and shakers. I don't like cliches, but people who have influence, let's put it that way, on our business community and really influence other things like philanthropy and other dynamics in the Albuquerque ecosystem. EJ, our first guest.
Yes, Jeffrey, I'm really happy to announce our first guest today is Carlisle Media Consultant. Sky Carlisle is the founder and principal consulting since 2006. And what I really like about his business and he is that he's a social entrepreneur and digital media expert, and he's dedicated to really help Albuquerque and the local economy become stronger. And he's dedicated his life to really helping move others forward personally and in his business. Welcome today, Sky.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, I'm really intrigued. And also, Sky, I didn't tell you this, Jeffrey, is one of our platinum sponsors for my B2B event.
Wonderful.
So
definitely.
I'm really excited to be partnering with you on business and collaborating on the show today. And we're just excited to really have our listeners hear what you're doing for other businesses and how, you know, businesses are really struggling with marketing and digital and all the social media. Enlighten our listeners today.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate it. Thank you both for having me on. It's one of the things I mentioned in the lobby as we were getting here, but it's great to be in such great company. Both of your names are obviously highly regarded in the area. And again, being close to you guys definitely makes things great. So I appreciate you guys for having me on and obviously representing the business. And for the B2B, that's definitely where we need to be for making sure that, you know, we were taking that next step. This is our first year as a platinum sponsor, but the biggest thing that we do for businesses is really kind of help them connect. Same thing you guys are doing and the same thing we're doing now on the radio. It really is about people. It's about the emotion and the response. And a lot of that gets lost in the social side of things. And so what we do is we take that emotional response and we pair that digitally so we can make the branding the branding and the digital side match up exactly with what the emotion and the feeling that the owner wants to represent.
You know, and talking about that emotional feeling, and Jeffrey, I know, you know, social media, you know, it's really huge right now and businesses are really struggling. What words of advice can you give for a business that's been in business 15, 20 years and they felt like they did well and then they've been struggling since 2009, we'll call it the magic year, right, where things really started to shift? Yeah. What would you give them as words of wisdom on how to change the mindset for being a sales company with that new audience?
Definitely. The biggest bit of advice I can have is twofold. One is you have to embrace change. And I think in embracing change, you have to go in with a growth mindset. And it really ends up being mindset at that point. For the average business owner that's in Albuquerque, of course, trends don't end up hitting Albuquerque where, you know, I call us the South Coast. You know, we're not East Coast, we're not West Coast. We end up getting trends about 6 years later than most. And so when it comes to a business owner, after embracing change, the biggest thing with that mindset is being willing to cope and understand with what you're competition's going to do to defeat you and get you out of business. And I always go in with that mindset when I speak with somebody. It's like, okay, this is great what you want to do. Let's take the next step and say, what would your competition do? Okay, now we start there and say, how can we do that better? Because that's really how people are going to edge you out of the market, is they're going to try to do stuff better than you. And if you can do it better than they can, you're going to stay in business.
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. I'm Jeffrey Candelari with Bank of the West, along with
DJ Heckes from Exhib It as co-host.
Our guest is Sky Carlisle, Digital Media. So let's start with rudiments. I don't like to make assumptions. I don't think our listeners like to make assumptions either. Social media, let's talk about what that means. I also want you to talk about an article I read recently in Albuquerque. Sears, Sports Authority, many of the big box stores are closing all over the country because consumers, the way people do business, that's changed. So that's the overarching point that we don't talk about. We get right into Facebook and Twitter, who cares? But I want to talk about the proclivity, the tendencies of consumers today that you've seen, and talk about how that can be integrated into platforms like Twitter and Facebook and the social media you do. Consumer, the change in consumership over the last 15 years.
Yeah, definitely. So to speak to that point on the digital media side of things, you know, and it relates directly to what DJ was saying earlier. Back in 2009, we've had a lot of social changes. We've had a lot of economic changes. There's less of an ability for people to just make spur-of-the-moment decisions. Everybody feels like they need to hold on to more what they have. And so for that reason, people end up doing research or they end up taking a referral. And that's where social media ends up coming in very, very highly, is that in an instant, I can find out a lot more about a business, read the reviews, and it takes that word of mouth, which is still very, very powerful, and the networking that still works, and takes that into a much broader scale where I can see if the rest of society has backed up what my friend said or what, you know, the referral came from. And so then you take that directly into a business standpoint and say, if I'm doing research and I'm standing in your store, does somebody else have it for cheaper? Well, I don't have to get in my car and drive across town to see if the competition has it cheaper, a cheaper product or a cheaper service. I can get immediately right on my phone, do the research immediately straight from there. And so what we talk about is, you know, hot-button buyers, people on the retail or brick-and-mortar stores, is 87% of people do research on mobile, and then they're ready to make a decision, but that was spurred from what they were able to see. So our biggest word of advice for business owners is not only are they connected on social, but it branches into what we call identity management, and that's managing the identity online.
So 50 years ago when I wanted to buy a refrigerator, I'd walk into Sears because I had Sears or another store, Beacons or whatever the hell it was, and I had two choices. And I had to actually drive there and make that decision about which refrigerator inside their inventory based on what limitations they had. But today, right, you're saying folks for that same refrigerator will do research with some keystrokes and possibly even order it online and have it shipped. So where do you see the brick-and-mortar store in 20 years? Will it still have a presence? If so, will it have to obviously change the way it does inventory and those kinds of things? Obviously, that's a pretty Herculean question, but yeah. What are your thoughts on those?
Yeah, if we take the big box and put it in a nutshell, that's kind of what we're trying to do now. But regardless of what type of business and regardless of the industry, whether it's a business that you provide or a service or if you're doing work similar to what we do with marketing consulting, regardless of what it is, it all goes back to relationships. It all goes back to how you can connect and the emotions you can create and elicit from people that you work with. And the biggest part of that is knowing who you are and knowing where you're going. Talk about that mindset shift initially. You know, the biggest thing from that ends up needing to go directly into how do the customers perceive you. We talk about big box stores. You mentioned, you know, Sears and a lot of those big places closing down stores. The biggest shock to me, and I knew it was eventually coming, but Walmart and Starbucks, right? Now they're closing down their locations or they're downsizing or they're moving. You know, if you've been to a Starbucks recently, you go directly into the drive-thru now. There's one on the west side I used to visit by going into the store. They closed that down. Across the street, they opened up a drive-thru, so I don't even have to stop anymore. So it is that change, right? So the idea is, like, how can you relate to your customers? And I think the biggest part of that is making sure that you provide a great experience for people. You know, brick and mortar will still be there. There is still a reason to speak to an expert, to speak to an investor, to work with people directly. The idea is that that business owner, the person that's providing a service or a product, they have to be invested themselves, but it really is about how they can connect. And that's where social media works really well with that.
You know, touching on that, Sky, the buy-in personas have changed. Mm-hmm. And it used to be where the company could market and open their doors and sell a great product and people would follow a brand. Now it's really about the consumer and the WIIFT, what's right in it for them.
Exactly.
And can you talk a little bit about that? Because we do have this demand and this shift in a lot of clients and companies that are that brick and mortar. If they don't create that experience and that shift, they're going to be suffering in the future.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest part of it is, you know, the larger the store, the larger, you know, more resources they have. But, you know, even take that into a microcosm of the small store, the single individual, a single person, the learning curve that is there, if you've never done social media, if you've never had digital before, can be overwhelming. But the idea is, you know, having somebody on your side, you know, a local leader, a consultant. But the idea is moving from beyond just what the store interaction is into a consistent interaction. Social media does that really well, email marketing. But like you mentioned, the brand, it's what people feel when they're a part of who you are and what you do. And on the digital marketing side of things, we call that a tribe. You know, people follow you online and they follow what you're doing because they want to be part of your tribe. They want your information. The same way I look to you guys as great community leaders in our area with what we're doing. You guys have a following everywhere you go. It's doing that same type of thing with a business. How well can you elicit that emotion, and how well can you work with the people that, you know, surround you, lifting them up, bringing them in? The idea is really just building on those emotions and, you know, knowing that you have to change and be fluid. And that's the biggest thing, is that Facebook, I could tell you all about Facebook today, but tomorrow Facebook's going to change.
You have to
be ready for that change.
You know, I'm also past president of the Keep It Kirky initiative, which is Buy Local, Grow Local, and Thrive Local. And I really like it, you know, our listening audience, a lot of it is small business. And I really like you to share that because I know I'm a local business owner and it's important for the people to buy local. And that internet thing, you have to create that experience and that value. It's not about features and benefits anymore. Right. And I even remember in 2012 when Albuquerque was kind of suffering and people were first a lot buying on the internet, I remember my out-of-state sales was 72%. But I'm happy to report Albuquerque is shifting and they're understanding that buy local because of the experience. And now I'm 55 out of state and 45 local. So can you talk about that shift and that mentality to help small businesses see that and to keep the business local?
Yeah. I think from an Albuquerque standpoint, we're in a very unique location. We're in a very unique situation. You know, our demographics are interesting. The people that are here, they still prefer a handshake. They still prefer working with people individually. And I think that, you know, for us as locals to embrace that, to embrace local networking, to embrace meeting with people, that still means something here. But the idea is making sure that you can take that, you know, on a larger scale. It's how do you translate that in digital? How do you translate that in your brand? How do you translate that in what you're working on?
Thank you for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. We're with you every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. Please tell your friends if you'd like to get a hold of Sky or any of our guests. Give me a call, 604-9081, 604-9081. You know, that's a curious thing. We talk about buy local, but the curious paradox about that is we don't do that as a state, meaning about 32% of all of our jobs or so are contingent on federal and state and municipal jobs. So, although we bemoan not buying locally, if you will, without that federal, state, municipal platform, we don't have a tax base. So let's not be too critical about those positions, those entities that frankly have supported generations since World War II in New Mexico. We don't talk about that. So all the people are buy local, fine. That means we eliminate Kirtland Air Force Base, Sandia Labs, Los Alamos Labs. In other words, just be mindful that those entities, whether we like them or not, have really provided generations of affluence and tax base for the state of New Mexico.
That's so true, and because I know my business depends on the state a lot and federal government, so I totally understand that. So I think it is a catch-22 on the mindset. You know, talking about, you know, local versus out-of-state, you know, I've been reading a lot in Albuquerque Business First, a couple articles. I'd love to get your take on this, Sky. You know, I just read an article that Wells Fargo is cutting back 581 employees in their San Francisco, Charlotte, and Raleigh-Durham in a number of cities across. What do you see or read out there? Because I'm telling you what, I do not want to repeat that 5 year of banks starting and the economy getting fear because of the election change. Do you see a correlation in an election turn year and business being afraid to buy?
I think there, you know, definitely is a correlation. I think every election year there's definitely ebbs and flows in the market that you can try to prepare for, but you're probably never prepared for. And so I think the idea is it goes back to mindset. But beyond that, I think, you know, in the banking industry, I have a lot of friends that have worked in the banking industry. A lot of friends are in finance. I'm sure Jeffrey could speak, you know, a lot closer to that. But the idea on my end is, you know, it goes back to buying, shopping locally, but at the same time digitally. We have a giant digital focus where there is less of a need for tellers. There's less of a need for that social interaction. I think, you know, it's still there. It still works within Albuquerque, but in larger places like San Francisco, that going into a bank probably is more of a hassle than it is anywhere else. So,
and people are doing mobile marketing. I know I bank with Bank of the West, Jeffrey, and I'm not just saying that because you work there, but I love this. I love my bank. And I really saw in the news, and also you guys are going mobile now with mm-hmm. the check scanning and everything. So you guys are getting it, aren't you?
Well, it's to this whole overarching point that folks don't have to go to Sears and buy a refrigerator. They can actually do their banking online. So banks have to be mindful of this and have to make those adjustments. Young people like Sky and Younger, they've grown up with keystroke business. That's what I call it. And they're not used to going into a bank like we did. And the point is, banks are probably, including Bank of the West, are not going to have branches en masse in 20 years like we do today, just because folks don't need that face-to-face interaction at a branch. They can do that online. At the same time, we're still going to have a culture where you can talk to a human being in Albuquerque, which I think distinguishes us from other banks. But at the end, people just want to be able to do this online. because it's just much more convenient, and it's instantaneous. Like you say, you can scan a check, and it's right there in your account immediately.
And that goes into the consumer change. You know, the other thing I read today, did y'all read on it was in the Albuquerque Economic Development was named one of America's leading economic development centers by Global Trade Magazine this month. I thought that was really cool. We're one of 18 because of all the initiatives we're doing for bringing in new business and the tax cuts that were allowed. Do you see that? You're working with a lot of businesses. Are you seeing people take advantage of the tax cuts and helping small business with the states doing out there?
Yeah, and it speaks to both your points. You know, Jeffrey mentioned, you know, we definitely have to be thankful for the funding that's out there through the government and a lot of the government contracts. As you know, Jeffrey mentioned, majority of our state is funded by that. You know, a lot of private contracting and at the same time a lot of just government funding. But outside of that, you know, working within the government sector and back out into private institutions, I think one of the biggest things that, you know, this speaks to is Gary Opedal and, you know, the greater Albuquerque area really getting behind the focus of keeping what, you know, needs to be here, you know, keeping people like myself here, you know, business owners that are willing to start a business, willing to go through the ebbs and flows, willing to grow. And, you know, there's a great shout out to some amazing companies out there, but LAVU is one of them. You know, people that are from the area, that are willing to work and invest in the area, that are willing to individualize their business based off of this locale and then really branch it out. And we have some great investors in the area. We have some great businesses. It really takes a group of those people. You know, so one of those is a nonprofit that I work with called Steps. They're an entrepreneur resource development team. An amazing nonprofit geared towards helping business stay here. And I think, you know, being in that mindset definitely helps, but it does take more than one person. It does take more than, you know, the Albuquerque Economic Development. It takes more than Gary Opedal. It takes more than just his focus and what he wants. It really takes a group of people to do that.
Thank you again for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. DJ, before we get back to Sky, do you want to talk about your B2B Expo?
I do, and I also want to talk about our ABQ Connect next event coming up. Wow, what a great event on the morning at Bravo's just a couple of days ago. Jeffrey, I just love seeing how many people are really coming out and appreciating the networking. Our next one is Thursday, March 31st from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Canyon Club, the newly remodeled. It used to be,
the Four Hills Country Club.
Yeah, the right. Canyon Club, renamed March 31st from 5 to 8. It's Albuquerque ABQ Connect Now live event. It's absolutely free. You can call 604-9081 to RSVP. Also, we just finished exhibit, I'm sure you guys heard a couple weeks ago, on KKOB and all the stations that Cumulus owns, that we ran our best local brand contest. I can't tell you the top three winners yet because it's going to be live in a few days and the People's Choice voting will begin. So stay tuned as we talk about that maybe next Saturday, Jeffrey. But our B2B event's coming up April 26th from 5 to 8 p.m. It's at the Sandia Resort and Casino. If you have not RSVP'd and you want to be among movers and shakers and business owners and managers and decision makers, along with 97 exhibitors that are showing what they do and how you can collaborate, connect, and work together, you need to RSVP by two ways. You can call 828-0574. Again, that's 828-0574. Or visit our website, exhib-it.com, and click on the B2B slider. That's exhib-it.com.
Thank you again for tuning in to ABQ Connect Now. I'm Jeffrey Candelaria along with DJ Heckes. So Sky is the owner of Digital Media Consulting. And so, Sky, getting back to this this overarching thought that business is in flux, it's changing. You have to be agile as a consumer and as a business owner. We know all this. Recently, I was quoted in the New Mexico Business Weekly asking me about the relevance of chambers of commerce. And that was touchy for me, sensitive to me, because I worked there for 20 years. But I said very unapologetically that chambers are no longer the epicenter of business like they were 15 years ago, even 10 years ago, even 5 years ago. So chambers have to also integrate all these changes like any other business in order to be relevant. I talk to millennials today and younger folk, and they don't even know what a chamber is because there are other resources in the environment. So what are your perspectives on that?
Yeah, I think, again, Albuquerque is one of those unique places where, you know, as a very young age, you mentioned, you know, kind of my age range. I'm 29 years old, I'll be 30 coming up here shortly in about a month or two. The idea is, you know, I learned how to type on a typewriter, but immediately went into typing on a Mac when I was in going into sixth grade.
Wow.
And so being that young, having a chance to take a look at both, it's very interesting because, you know, again, to me, a handshake still means something. You know, being able to meet with somebody still means something. And that's what I love about Albuquerque. That's what I love about our culture. And I think, you know, the biggest thing is, you know, I was part of the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, and any sort of sales or marketing job that I had before opening my business, and then even with my business being part of that chamber. And Jeffrey, I mean, it's definitely, you know, goes back to you and who you are. People wanted to follow you. People wanted to be a part of who you were and what you were doing. And so, you know, I had multiple businesses I represented, but the Hispano Chamber was always one that I always looked to. And I think you guys were one of the most forward-thinking and forefront of what was there. And the Hispano Chamber today still is forward-thinking and willing to change. But it does require a lot of people that are willing to be open and willing to embrace. And so there's so many different types of businesses that Albuquerque can sustain, and at the same time, too, a chamber can sustain. But it's amazing for what a group of like-minded people in the same room can discuss and then the business that can come from that.
Well, I appreciate that because, you know, I'm on the board of directors, so I love to hear that. Let's also share, a couple weeks ago, we had a client that we both shared, we both worked with,
yep.
Altree. They just made a public announcement
yes,
at 1 Million Cups. That was an awesome event. And talk a little bit about that, about how we collaborated and what you do so people will know what Carlisle Media Consultants does.
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, Altree is amazing, run by a gentleman named Tony Berger. And as, you know, DJ just mentioned, we just had an event for them. They just had their public launch. It's 20 years in the making, 12 years of patent building and production build out, $3.5 million already invested. It's an amazing resource that could have gone anywhere. You know, research institutions from the East Coast all the way through the West Coast, even overseas, were wanting to snatch this up. But Tony wanted to plant a flag in the sand and say, I'm from New Mexico. I live in New Mexico. This is where this needs to be. Albuquerque Economic Development jumped on board. There's a lot of other supporters in the area that helped launch what is called Altree. It's a, you know, bio-friendly product that takes wood chips and plastic jugs from the landfill and wood chips that would be otherwise disposed of or left in the forest floor, combining those two to make what is now what we see as aluminum road signs, as a replacement for aluminum road signs, saving, you know, tons of money and tons of resources for every government institution, going back to government, like what Jeffrey was talking about. It's amazing to see what they were able to put together. And so their website, of course, altree.com, A-L-T-R-E-E.com, but our collaboration is great. DJ, you know, branded everything amazingly with Exhibit and really set that emotion for them, who they were, what they were doing. And the logo was spot on. The colors were spot on. Everything that she was able to put together as a prime package for a client. Really, then the handoff on my end was creating a website, social branding, and then making sure that everything fit with what DJ had put together. And that the consumer on the other end of things really got the same emotion and the same feel from everything that she was able to create. So really there's a lot of people involved, but you know, from website design to social media branding to making sure that we do some initial PR work, that's the biggest aspect of it.
And it's really about listening to the client, because I met with Tony first, and when he came to town, and I think this is what Albuquerque's known for, Jeffrey, and you're good at this too, is I sat with him and I listened, and immediately I connected him with AED and a lot of the people that could help him make that decision and really launch Albuquerque and get into the 1 Million Cups. And isn't that what Albuquerque's about?
Well, I don't know that Albuquerque's about it, but I know that some people like us, we operate in that space. And I think you're very good at, and I'm very good at, connecting dots. So putting people together to build synergistic relationships in business. And, you know, like we had our leadership summit recently, and in my presentation I talked about, when I help people, you know, it requires 5 minutes of my time to make 3 phone calls, to send an email, whatever. But that can make a big difference in that person's business life. Mm-hmm. It's not all about me. It's about the tribe that Sky indicated. It's taken me and you and Sky, and in some cases, well, for me, 25 years to build my tribe. And not everybody likes me. I get that. But I'm not concerned with being liked. I'm concerned with taking action and building opportunity and making a difference. I could care less about being liked. It means nothing to me. That's why I'm trying to destroy the Facebook syndrome called being liked. Make a difference. It's about purpose. And I think that's what you have. I believe that's what Sky's business is about. That's what this show's about, having a purpose and making a difference.
And building those relationships. You know, when you become successful, you really need to give back. you need to teach other people to of the shortcuts of how it maybe took you the school of hard knocks.
Well, giving back is kind of a cliche. I appreciate what you're saying, but giving back to me means if Sky wants to meet somebody in my tribe, I'm going to connect them. That's
yep.
it. That could mean business for Sky. And so is that making a difference? Is that helping people? I think so. But it doesn't. Most people don't necessarily think like that. There's this silo mentality that I'm in my little fiefdom and we, you know, we go on for that. That's why people can't stand politicians, because they operate in their fiefdoms and they really don't generally help others other than, can that person help me get reelected or whatever.
So, Sky, we only have a couple minutes left. Is there anything you want to add about what you can do for our listeners and how to contact you?
Yeah, I think there's two things. One, I'll just touch on what you guys said. One, I appreciate it, and, you know, being, you know, regarded by you guys is definitely, you know, rewarding for me, knowing that I'm, you know, again, in such great company. So, biggest thing for every business owner is a small takeaway is twofold. One, there's a YouTube video out there by Simon Sinek called, you know, What's Your Why?
The Why.
And so what you need to do is start from the inside out. So I start with every business. DJ does the same thing, starting with your why and going from the inside out. You guys have done that. You've instilled that in me and the younger generation. I think every business owner needs to do the same thing. It goes back to emotion. It goes back to who you are and really the significance that you have. So my one word is then significance. That's the second part of it is, you know, if you could equate everything into one word, what would it be? My one word is significant. Significant relationships in the business that we have and the people that I am helping and significant change made in the local economy and everybody around me. And so for that reason, I mean, the biggest thing is, you know, I sit on multiple nonprofit boards. You can find me just by searching my name, Sky Carlisle, just like the street, last name Carlisle, just like the street. Or you can go to CarlisleMediaConsulting.com and find more information there. The idea is, just like Jeffrey said, connecting people, bringing people together with a handshake, and really sitting down and getting to know somebody. That's the biggest part of any business. If you know who you are, you know who you want to connect with, you can make a difference.
You know, and Sky, you're a very humble person. Will you share with the audience why you're a sponsor for the B2B?
Yeah. The biggest reason I'm a sponsor is for this B2B is making sure that, you know, we can have a bigger impact. And it really is, you know, people like you two that are sitting in the room here, Jeffrey and DJ, it's getting around and being a part of movers and shakers. And at the same time, too, making sure that, you know, not only are we associated with them, but then I'm able to learn from them. And so for me, being part of a group like that and learning from you guys and then following in your footsteps and being as close as I can to you guys, that's the biggest part of it. And I think there's a lot we can do together, and it really does take a lot of people for social change. And so for our area and for the mindset we need, as you guys mentioned, you know, in order for us to make a difference, we really have to do it together.
Well, we need you and your expertise because I'm in my 50s, and I did business the old-fashioned way, you know, just by meeting people and putting a brochure out and all kind of stuff. So I need to know more about your world and the space you operate in, what I call a keystroke business, which is good because it's convenient. Information can provide us with, as a consumer, much more information about an enlightened purchase. But we need you. That's why this building of bridges that DJ put together is extremely meaningful. So, DJ, we have about 30 seconds. What is your why, DJ? I've only known you for 15 years, and I don't know what your why is.
My why is to do things the right way, to help our customers make it easy and convenient to do business with an experience so I can collaborate and connect with them and really put the right message on the right product the first time.
Thank you again, Sky, for being a guest.
Did you know that only 50% of your marketing dollars actually work? That's right, just 50%. Which 50% is working for you? Are you tired of wasting money and not reaching the right target audience through your marketing dollars? Exhibit can help you get noticed through design and print of corporate branding, marketing one-sheets, brochures, and trade show displays. Marketing has changed, and the way to reach your target audience is changing. If you want to grow your business and work with a reputable and well-known company, be sure to call now and talk with one of our marketing and Exhibit experts, 828-0574. That's 828-0574. Or visit us on the web at exhib-it.com. Again, exhib-it.com. Exhibit, it's New Mexico's leading provider of marketing, design, and printing, and portable, modular, and custom trade show displays. Proud sponsor and co-host of KTBL 1050 AM ABQ Connect Now Business Talk Radio Show on Saturdays from 10 to 11 a.m.
I've been watching you. KKOB's Talk Partners, 1050, KTBL, Los Ranchos de Albuquerque, a Cumulus station.
South Carolina Democrats vote knocking off ISIS. I'm Michael Toscano. Voting is underway in the South Carolina primary between Democratic presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Correspondent Joe John says he's seeing a strong turnout of African-American voters, crucial for Clinton, but turnout is not expected to be that heavy overall.
They're not expecting anything like 2008. They're not expecting anything, quite frankly, like the Republican race just last weekend.
German